Thakur Jai, Prem Sekho Shri Krishna Chaitanya, Brahmanichananda Shidway, the Gadadma, Shibasati Gaur, Bhakta Vrindikajai, Shishi Radhakrishna, Gopagopada Sayam Kun Radhakunda, Giri Govardhan Kijai, Vrindavanam Kijai, Maturam Kijai, Jagannatha Swami Kijai, Vunamai Kijai, Shrimati Lasi Devi Kijai, Samaveda Bhakta Vrindikajai, Gaur Premananda Hari All glorious the assembled devotees, all glorious the assembled devotees, all glorious the assembled devotees. All glories to Shri Guru and Gauranga Shri Prabhupada Ki Jai. Om Maganatya Mirandasya Gananjana Sadatya Chakshur Miritam Jena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. So first we wanted to mention a little bit about this word epistemology, which means, as I mentioned before, how do you know what you know or what you think you know? So there's different methods of knowing things. One is called pratyaksha, the direct perception of the senses, which is definitely faulty. Has anyone here ever seen a mirage? Mirage means you see water where there's no water. So we have problems with these senses because the senses sometimes give us imperfect information. So that's one way of receiving knowledge, or we can read history books. Or we can make a general conclusion from seeing some specific examples. In other words, we see something happens like the sun rises from the east, and we say, well, the sun will always rise from the east. Of course, we know the sun does always rise from the east. But that's called induction. Sometimes you could be wrong about things like that. For example, everybody knows that I come on time for Mangalarti every morning, right? I come here at about 4 o'clock in the morning. So you could say, every morning he will come. But you'll be wrong, because you're not observing me 365 days a year. On the day after Janmashtami, I don't come, because I'm up all night. Okay. So that's called induction, drawing a general conclusion from specific observations. So these are all faulty ways of receiving knowledge. The perfect way of receiving knowledge is what we call the descending process. And knowledge that descends from the perfect person. Who's the perfect person?
Krishna.
Krishna. Nobody heard. Yeah, so some people shaking their head. Oh, who's perfect? Krishna is perfect. He's omniscient, omnipotent, everything. He knows everything. He's all strong. He has all these omni features to him. So he's perfect. So if he says something, dharmam tu sakshat bhagavat pranitam, then he can give us dharma, perfect knowledge that doesn't change. Knowledge that changes, or information that changes, or qualities that change, are not really dharma. Dharma is something that is the essential, inherent, eternal quality of something. Okay. So, therefore, we have something called the descending process coming from Krishna. And there's different lines of descending information. These are called different lines of parampara, disciplic successions. And we are members of the Rama Madhva Gaudiya Sampradaya, which is one of those lines. Now, many of the members of the disciplic succession, the prominent members, are what we call avatars. That's a fancy word. That doesn't mean like blue people that you saw in some movie by James Cameron. Right, Gopal? Gopal knows about these things. He's the expert in. He's in personified IMDb. I won't tell you what that is. But that means they descend, cross down from above. And they're sent as members of the disciplic succession to teach things to us, to come down to this earth to save us. This avatar, that's what an avatar is. And Of course, generally when you hear the word avatar, you think of the dasha avatars, right? What is that? Like Kurma, Matsya, Varaha, Nrsingha, all these different avatars. Lord Balaram, whose appearance date is next week. And then Krishna is also one of the dasha avatars. But there's a specific type of avatar that's called Shakta Vesha avatar, which means a jiva soul. Jiva soul means like you and me, but someone who's actually perfect in that regard. A jiva soul who's given the power or told to come down from the spiritual world. So this book that we're going to talk about was written by one of these personalities whose spiritual identity, we'll find out about in a second, I'm not going to give it away, has a spiritual identity in the spiritual world in relationship to Krishna and Radharani. Wow. Can you imagine a book written by someone who was sent by Radharani to preach? Also, Prabhupada was sent. Prabhupada tells the story that one day he was in the spiritual world and Krishna said, you have to come down here, there. Not here. Here is here. But anyway, you have to go there to write some books about me and save people. And Prabhupada said, how can I go to that place? Because we're thinking, this is a nice place. Just read the news and see how nice it is. So, and then Krishna said, no, you go down there. And so Prabhupada is also a Shakta Vesha avatar. But today we're going to talk about Rupa Goswami, who is a Shakta Vesha avatar. He wrote this book called Nectar Devotion, which Prabhupada entitled titled as the complete science of bhakti yoga. Now, yoga means to connect yourself with the Supreme. It's from the Sanskrit root yuj, which means connection, yukta, like this. And bhakti means through devotion, but not just like tears. Not tear devotion. What do they say, crocodile tears? Anyone's heard of crocodile tears before? That means when you cry, it's because of yourself. If you're depressed, or you want something, like if your wife wants something, she cries, you never get me any sorries anymore. That's not devotion. That's trickery. So, anyway, so bhakti actually means, you can't really define it in one word in English. It means unalloyed service to the Lord, anyami lashatachunyam. It's actually a whole verse that describes what bhakti is. Anyami lashatachunyam janakarma na avritam anukulina krishna shilin and bhakti ultimam. Which means bhakti is devoid of any personal interest. I'm not going to get into the details of what the whole verse says. And it's simply based upon pleasing Krishna. Doing what Krishna wants, pleasing him, and doing it in a spirit that you're happy doing it. That's bhakti. So that's bhakti yoga. So we're going to enter the bhakti rasamrita. Sindhu is the technical name of the book. So rasa, let's get into the different words. Bhakti means devotion. As I said, unalloyed devotion. Rasa means a mellow. It's not like that song in the 1960s, like mellow yellow. Mellow means like a taste that you get from something. For example, when you eat a lemon, what's the rasa? Sour. When you eat a sweet ball, what's the rasa? That's good. So that's the rasa. So we get different rasas from doing different things in this world. When you watch the World Cup, what's the rasa you get? Anyway, someone said it. Anger. Okay. That's the rasa of anger. Rudra. As soon as you get all worked up and sweaty, even though you're not playing the game. And then Amrit, or Amrita, Amrit in Hindi, of course, and Amrita in Sanskrit, means nectar. Nectar means something that's so unbelievably ecstatic. Unbelievably pleasurable, makes you shake and shiver in ecstasy. So that's, and Sindhu means an ocean. An ocean is there because an ocean is what? Salty? Why is ocean used here? Anyone have any ideas? what? Vast. Unlimited. So it's an unlimited nectarian ocean of devotion where you get to taste mellows. Or get to taste these and russets. Which is what the meaning... Isn't that amazing? If you think about it. It's a lot different than just plain old liberation where you get nothing. We just like get free of the material world, merge into the effulgence of the Lord, and therefore it's called nectar of devotion. So, this is Srila Prabhupada's words. Prabhupada says in the introduction, the Rupa Goswami, who's the author of this nectar devotion, is to present the ocean of bhakti ras. Ras means mellow. Juice is just like the ocean. The juice, it is just like the ocean. The ocean has limit, has limitation, but that is unlimited. So, I'm not going to read all these things, so we don't have much time. Prabhupada said, every service has some attractive feature which drives the servitor progressively on and on. And so even in the material world, one develops some ras, or experiences some ras, interacting with his or her dog. Right? There's a ras. There's a taste. Otherwise, why would we do anything? Of course, there's not an exchange of ras, which is very interesting. We are looking for an exchange of ras, as far as loving exchanges are concerned, because between different species, there's not an actual exchange of ras. Like you are petting your dog, for example, and thinking, love, 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 and the dog is thinking, when is he going to feed me? Because you can't really have a communication. Prabhupada said, ras is only exchange, loving exchanges can only be done between members of the same species. And of course, we're all spirit souls. So on the spiritual platform, you can actually exchange ras. And the ras in the material world has a problem to it. What is that problem? What does that say? What does that mean? Flickering happiness. But in the beginning, something tastes really good, and then you eat, and you eat, and you eat, and it's disgusting after some time. And then it doesn't long endure, and there's another thing called bhogatyaga. If you want to enjoy, you got to stop enjoying for a little while so you can enjoy. You got to fast if you can enjoy a feast. Like if you ate 15 minutes before you came here, you're not going to enjoy what's downstairs. Right? You'll spoil your appetite. So you got to have this boga, tyaga means renunciation, before you can actually enjoy. So that's the problem with the material ras. You have to alternate sense enjoyment and renunciation. You got to take the good with the bad. My mother used to tell me that all the time. Before I joined, or when I did join the Krishna consciousness movement, my mother said, you can't be happy all the time like you're saying, because you have to be miserable at least half the time to enjoy it. I said, Mom, you're right, materially. But spiritually, we're happy all the time. So Amrit, of course, is the nectar. We're not going to read this particular quote. Any action performed for the satisfaction of Krishna in this transcendental bhakti rasa stage of life can be relished perpetually. That's interesting. Any rasa that you experience serving Krishna is not lost. Swapam apyashya dharma shatayate. There's no loss of diminution. In other words, you have to take it with you, that nectar or spiritual advancement. So Rupa Goswami was one of the six Goswamis of Vrindavan. We see the six of them. And they were all eternal associates, avatars from the spiritual world. There's a very interesting verse written by Srinivas Acharya, who's another great devotee. And I'm not going to read that because of lack of time, but I'll give my own translation. I'm not going to read that translation. It's a prayer offering respects to these six great personalities who have perused, that means they've read, all the revealed scriptures, that means all the Vedic literatures, as well as the Western literatures, Bible, Quran, and practically every single spiritual literature, because these personalities were educated in Sanskrit, Urdu, Bengali, Persian. And so they could read all these literatures, and they established something called eternal religious principles by going through all these rituals, all these literatures. Now, all these literatures are good, but many of them have injunctions just with time, place, and circumstance. In other words, let's take the Ten Commandments, for example, which are very good. Everybody knows about the Ten Commandments? Thou shalt not watch TV. I got the wrong Ten Commandments, sorry. Ten Commandments, like honor your father and mother, keep the Sabbath day, do not murder, like that, do not commit adultery, etc. So these are actually very good. But they're not eternal religious principles because they're only for certain circumstances where people are doing those things. When you see a law or a commandment, it indicates, at least a negative commandment, don't do this, don't do this, don't do that. It indicates those things are going on. What if you see a sign that says, no speeding over 55 miles an hour? What does it mean? It means people are speeding. And then people get fuzzbuster. You know what a fuzzbuster is? No. That's a radar detector. In America, you can detect when the fuzzer, not when the police are. They used to be called fuzz. I don't know why. But anyway, so you can try to avoid or evade the law. So, in other words, you apply these certain principles according to time, place, and circumstance when they're applicable. They're not eternal. For example, in the Bhagavad Gita, you don't have Krishna saying to Arjuna, honor your mother and father, because he's already doing it. It's only when you have people not doing things you have to tell them to do things. Right. Very important point. So eternal religious principles are principles that apply every time, place, and circumstance in life. You are the soul. You're eternal, part and parcel of Krishna. Krishna is non-different from his names. These are all eternal. Where the other things are good, but they're not necessarily applicable in every circumstance. So these six Goswamis, they actually peruse these scriptures, and there's the word-by-word translation, with the idea of coming up with these eternal religious principles. Of course, they were followers of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, of course, is Krishna himself, who appeared a little over 500 years ago. And he taught these six Goswamis, because even though the six Goswamis of Vrindavan were eternal avatars coming down from the spiritual world, they appeared not to have that information so they could show the principle of disciplic succession. Just like Arjuna, Bhagavad Gita, is Krishna's associate from the spiritual world. And he appears wherever Krishna and whenever Krishna appears. But Krishna put him under yoga maya, illusion. So he appeared to be in ignorance, so Krishna would speak the Gita. So, and the same thing with the six Goswamis of Vrindavan. They were actually devotees from their very birth. Here's a nice verse from Narayana Das Thakur, lamenting, when will I become eager to understand the literature, the books given by the six Goswamis, to understand Radha and Krishna, the transcendental loving affairs of Radha and Krishna. So, Srila Rupa Goswami is the primary follower of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu who we're following. And therefore, we are called Rupanugas, followers of Srila Rupa Goswami. And there's this nice verse, Sri Chaitanya Manovishtam, Stabitam Yena Bhutale, Swayam Rupa Kadamayam, Vidati Swapadantikam. It states that Srila Rupa Goswami has established within this material world the mission to fulfill the desire of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So, Rupanuga means follower of Srila Rupa Goswami. And Prabhupada said, Krishna consciousness movement is conducted under the supervision of Srila Rupa Goswami. And Prabhupada also said in a lecture that we are called Rupanugas. Anuga means following the footsteps of Rupa Goswami. So as the Rupa Goswami is following his predecessor, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, so we have to follow our predecessor, then we will be successful. So it's described, now we're talking about his spiritual identity. He is someone in the spiritual world called Rupa Manjari. Manjari means like a little bud, and Rupa Manjari is the young girl follower of Sri Sri Radha and Krishna, who serves Radha and Krishna eternally, who the devotees work under. This is a description here. Srimati Radharani is served by 8 principal gopis, and Lalita Sakhi is her dearest friend. And these intimate maidservants are assisted by the 8 main mandaris, which are small girls. It's a spiritual body. It's not material bodies. Remember this. Don't project your own understanding upon the spiritual realm. There's no lust in the spiritual realm. There's no material emotions. Everything is based on love for Krishna and pleasing Krishna. So Rupa Goswami or Rupa Manjari is the leader, and they please Radha and Krishna by carrying messages, preparing tasty beverages, and making flower garlands, and swinging Radha and Krishna, and all those wonderful things. So the 6 Goswamis, plus Lokanath Goswami and Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami, are the inner circle of these Manjaris. And here's a description, we're not going to go over all of them, of who each person is in the spiritual world. Many of our acharyas reveal who they are in the spiritual world. Pretty interesting, isn't it? Of course, Srila Prabhupada never revealed who he was in the spiritual world. So we don't try to guess at that. That's not appropriate. But you have Bhakti Siddhanta, Bhakti Vinod Thakur. They all revealed who they were in the spiritual world, because we all have a spiritual identity. We have a Siddhadeya and a Sadhakadeya. Sadhakadeya means the external manifestation. The Siddhadeya means the perfect form in the spiritual world. So there's the disciplic succession. Lord Brahma passed down this information. So here's some interesting information. Srila Prabhupada took initiation in 1933. And at this time, Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur instructed him to study this book, Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. Of course, it wasn't called Nectar Devotion at that time because it wasn't in English. But he instructed it, and he said, this is Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur's words. Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, of course, is the guru of Srila Prabhupada, that this is the law book of devotion or on devotional service. So this happened at the Radha Damodara temple. And Srila Prabhupada himself executed devotional service before he came to the West. And at the Radha Damodara temple, and of course at the Radha Damodara temple, there's the Bhajan Puti, the Samadhi of Rupa Goswami, and Srila Prabhupada's eternal residence is there at the Radha Damodara temple. Prabhupada said the corner of the Radha Damodara temple is just like the hub of the wheel of the spiritual world. It is the center of the spiritual world. So Prabhupada's decision to stay at the Radha Damodara temple was an indication of his desire to work under Srila Rupa Goswami and dedicate his life's mission for translating and preaching Krishna consciousness. So Prabhupada actually saw Srila Rupa Goswami. Did you know this? It's very interesting. I'm just going to read the last portion. Like Prabhupada was asked, we are... I was told that one day you were told by Rupa Goswami that you must go to the West. And Prabhupada's mood changed slightly. And he said, but that was an open secret, he said dismissively. Everybody knew. It's interesting. So in other words, Srila Rupa Goswami, even though he had disappeared from this world 500 years previous, approximately 450 years previous, he came down and instructed Prabhupada to go to the Western world to preach Krishna consciousness. So this is how important this personality is. So, anyway, so that's a brief overview. We wanted to keep it short of the importance of this book, Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, and Dijanarayan. You have copies to sell, people?
I have
on the table downstairs. So any of you want are welcome to purchase this book, Understand the Science of Krishna Consciousness According to the Way it was taught by Srila Rupa Goswami, presented by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Just briefly, this nectar devotion brings one, first of all, to the stage of Vaidhi Bhakti. Vaidhi Bhakti means devotional service in practice and according to the rules and regulations. And then it comes to Raghunuga Bhakti, which is devotional service in practice spontaneously. So it's a progressive stage as you get higher and higher in spiritual life. In other words, you begin to practice and then you begin to like it, because as Krishna says in the Gita, happiness in the mode of goodness is what? Does anyone know? Anyone listening? It's difficult in the beginning, I'm sorry, please. It's difficult in the beginning, because if I tell people, you know, you chant, you do this, follow these rules and regulations, it's a real austerity. Follow the four rules and regulations, no meat for eggs, fish for eggs, no intoxication, no gambling, no illicit sex, especially in the Western world, and now even in India, wow. Who can do that? I mean, there's more liquor stores in India than I've seen in the United States now. It's true. And they're also brewing it in their home. Homebrew. So, people think, oh, so in the beginning, it's difficult to change your life in different ways, because you're thinking, well, what is the happiness in this world? Getting drunk with friends? Not really. And having watching a lot of Bollywood movies and, you know, being romantic. Or, of course, eating any damn thing. Terrible, isn't it? You look at these regulated principles. But then it's an austerity for people to follow these regulated principles in Kali Yuga. So, in the beginning, it's a little difficult, you know, chanting a certain number of rounds or doing things like that. But then after a while, it becomes nectarian, as though we're nectarian. It becomes so pleasurable that you can't stop. I mean, I've had experience, not to brag or anything, but when I chant more on Ekadashi, sometimes I chant 64 rounds. 64 rounds means 64 times 108, and each bead has the whole Hare Krishna mantra built in. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Rama Rama. The more I want to chant. That's the interesting thing about chanting. The more you chant, the more you want to chant. Try anything else like that. Like the more you chant some mundane song, like some Beatles song, other than My Sweet Lord. But Lucy in the Sky with Diamonds or something. Let's say the more you chant that song, let's hear something new. So that's in the beginning, it's a little difficult, but then it becomes like nectar. So that's the Raghunuga platform. You want to do it. So when I chant 64 rounds, I can't stop sometimes. It's like, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, wow, exciting. And that's, anybody can experience that. I'm not, nothing special. So then, so the second stage is that Raghunuga stage. And in the Raghunuga stage, you begin to get a glimpse of who you are in the spiritual world. Wow, wouldn't that be nice? You see, you become attached or attracted to certain people in the spiritual world. And you begin to think, well, and then you go to your guru, and your guru says, yeah, I think you're a peacock. No, Gurudev. I want something sexy. So, I see someone do that. I have one disciple. Yeah, she came to me and said, tell me who I am in the spiritual world. Well, I think you're a cow. She got so angry, she almost left. So, but you get a glimpse, because everything in the spirit, even Uddhava, the great devotee of Krishna, prays to be what? Grass and creepers. I mean, that's ecstatic, isn't it? To get stepped on by Krishna. Wouldn't that be nice? I wouldn't mind being a creeper or dust or anything like that. So then you begin to get a glimpse and verify that. Then later on you get to the Baba Bhakti stage. Nectar devotion describes all this. All your ecstasies that you can experience. You got beginning ecstasy, things that stimulate your ecstasy. You got 33 uncontrollable ecstasies you can experience. You got 8 regular ecstasies you can experience. You got a mellow that you're sitting at, your Sai Baba that you're normally at. Wow. This is exciting. And then finally you come to Prema and you get to shake hands with Krishna. Wouldn't that be nice?
Or high five.
Anyway, so this is what Bhakti Rasa describes in terms of oceans, you know, Eastern Ocean, Northern Ocean, Southern Ocean. I'm not going to go through the whole thing, but it's really an exciting book. So we ask everyone to see it in Narayan Prabhu, and we will introduce you to this book. Or if you have the book, read it, study it, or take a course in it. Now, we've given several courses in this book. And this book tells us how to approach Balaram and Krishna, who's just going to say it's why or how we know, what we know, how to do what we think we're doing, or what we are doing. So we're sure we're on the right path because of this book and the teaching of Srila Prabhupada and Bhagavad Gita and other literatures too. So on that happy note, any questions or comments? Yes. Which
I would like to know the kind of a roadmap of the goals, right, to come to the power stage. I mean, what kind of practical goal we can set?
Okay. Adosh Shraddha. He wants to know, I'll just say what he said. He wants to know the practical roadmap. Okay. Lord Chaitanya gave a progressive stage that relates to the Bhakti Prasanna, just to help you understand. It begins with the Adosh Shraddha. There's some initial faith. Like we mentioned, you went to the university. You have some initial faith in the professors. It's not complete faith. It's initial faith, like interest, but trust, at least. There's some trust. Adosh. And then the second stage is sadhu-sangota. Begin to associate with the sadhus. And when you begin to associate with the sadhus, you do what the sadhus are doing. What do the sadhus do? Sadhu business. What do sadhus do? No, they do bhajan. You know, what does Krishna say in the Gita? Machita mankita pranat, parintasya parasram, patintasya mamnicham, dushamticha, ramaticha. They're always chanting my glories and enlivening with each other, etc. You can join and I'm satisfied. So, bhajan akre, then you begin to follow some of the rules and regulations, bhajan akre. And then as you're following, the unwanted things go away. Unwanted things are like anger. I mean, does anyone enjoy anger? I guess some of you may. But I don't enjoy anger. I mean, someone said to me on the phone today, I lost it the other day. What does that mean? I got really angry and I just lost it. I almost killed someone. So, I mean, it's not really enjoyable because then you have to... Anyway, you get sick from anger, too. It affects the body in so many different ways. Not only the psyche. And then you have to calm down. Don't talk to me, Prabhu, I'm angry. So you overcome anger and lust. I mean, lust just disturbs the mind. I mean, you may think it's nice to fall in love. But... Anyway, this is not a synopsis class, so it disturbs the lust, anger, greed. Because when you're greedy for something, you're not happy. You stand online for 5 days to get the latest iPhone. Isn't it? People stand outside, they beat each other up. Walmart opens up during Christmas, you know. What is it called, Black Friday or something like that? And so all these old ladies with their pocketbooks sitting in face. That nice? And they're enjoying, they have smiles on their faces. Even I was watching people after the World Cup, they didn't have smiles on their faces. So anyways, lust, anger, greed, illusion, envy, all these things. You're envious of someone, it doesn't make you happy. And so the anarthas go away, your heart feels, it becomes peaceful like a lake. Instead of like a tsunami, our hearts are like tsunamis right now. You know, big, tremendous waves that are just... I mean, we hardly know how we're going to feel the next morning, what side of the bed we're going to wake up on. Isn't it? I mean, it's hard being in Maya. And so you get rid of these, and then your heart becomes so peaceful. Wow. Without peace, there's no happiness anyway. And then, so that's the anarchists go, then you become stable and steady, predictable. You can predict, you know, you predict someone's mood. You're not worried about talking to them at the wrong time of the day or night. They may snap at you if their blood sugar is low. So then, and after that, then you get a ruchi, then you get a taste. I mean, you want to chant all day long. Ruchi, and the shakti become completely attached to the Krishna, you become in love, madly in love. But this love doesn't go away. This love continues. And then bhava, you know, all the ecstasies. So these are the progressive stages given by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, which can be related to, let's say, avaidhi, sadhana, or raghunatha sadhana, you know, say. So, one of the questions that we have to take prasad, we want the ras from prasad.
So, I have a very simple question. Like, you know, there are many people who are visiting for the first time today.
Okay.
And, you know, like, they've taken, already taken several steps towards Krishna by visiting the temple. But, when they go back home, how could they, you know, although, you know, there's like so many regulative principles and so many rounds they could chant, but the single most important thing they could take back that could help them make Krishna more a part of their daily life?
Good question. Good question. See if it's a Narayan. I could ditch Narayan right now with his mobile phone in his hand. And he will arrange for you to have a book according appropriate your level of spiritual advancement, and then you start with chanting. I mean, you can chant for 2 minutes a day. Even if you just chant one time, Hare Krishna,
Krishna.
Not even the whole mantra. Krishna, from that day forward, Krishna accepts you as his. All it takes is one, sincere. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
And that's all you have to do. And then there's little steps after that. You can offer your food to Krishna. And we don't expect someone to do everything all at once, to come back and take sannyasa the next day. You know, just step by step. So, you know, but the basic thing is you read the book. It'll explain these things. We have so many books, not only the Nectar of Devotion, but Vishnu Ryan has so many books. And he'll be happy to sell you a whole set, three sets, install the set in your home, right? All those things. So these books will explain, and gradually. I mean, just like the way I was first exposed to Krishna consciousness, I heard Prabhupada chanting on the radio, and I kept listening to him over and over again, and then next thing I knew, I was a sannyasi. So just... it grows on you. it's natural. It just grows on you. It's just something so nice and nectarian. I mean, Krishna and Radha Krishna's pastimes, like what about Janastami? We're going to have Abhishek for the deities. Isn't it? It just grows on you. It's so nice that everything else becomes not as pleasurable. I mean, you still do everything else. It's not that you take sannyas. There should only be one sannyasi here, me. But... there's not enough chapatis to get around from the rotis. So, but at least it doesn't matter whether you're sannyasi, vanaprastha, grahastha, whatever, brahmachari. If you take up this chanting, your life will become so pleasurable. The chanting is the matter. Okay, so now we have prasadam. Thank you very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada,
Thank you for the wonderful class.